This talk is offered by Ordinary Mind Zendo. Ordinary Mind was founded by Barry Magid, Dharma heir of Charlotte Joko Beck, and is dedicated to her vision of a psychologically minded Zen practice adapted to the needs of American students practicing in the context of their everyday lives. Our public programs are made possible by donations from people like you.
In the last decade of his life, poet William Carlos Williams, after suffering a number of strokes and even undergoing electroshock therapy for depression, went on to write some of the greatest poetry of his career. And one poem from that phase in a volume called Desert Music begins with the line, "The descent beckons as the ascent beckoned." And he goes on to say that no defeat is made up entirely of defeat, that every world lost reveals a world unexpected. Reading that this morning put me in mind of a saying that delusion is gain, enlightenment is loss. And that in a very important sense, there's something about our practice that really only comes into its own in the second half of our life, as the descent beckons. And yet, Zen is so typically portrayed as a country for young men, as a rigorous, almost, you know, physically athletic discipline for 20-year-olds, you know, that can endure the rigors of Rohatsu Sesshin, who are physically able to go days without sleep, sit for hours in pain, right? Endure the unendurable. And there is a way in which, for those of us who have done some of that, Zazen in your youth lets you see that you're capable of doing things that you never imagined you could do. Zazen, as you get older, teaches you that there are things you can't do that you always imagined you'd be able to do forever. And it's perhaps the latter that's the greater lesson. So much of what happens when we begin practice is caught up in curative fantasies and notions of accomplishment and doing these extraordinary sessions and having unusual experiences are all great temptations for the ego which can almost always be inflated by the extraordinary. And yet we have to go through that to take it to some kind of limit of what do we think we're going to gain. How do we wear out those curative fantasies except by pursuing them to their limit? Yet eventually we arrive at a place like Williams in the desert. You hear a different kind of music. The desert, when things are emptied out of our gaining fantasies, and we start to realize that maybe after all, this is it. I think our practice matures in all sorts of ways only after, in some way, it begins to plateau or even stagnate, where we go through that desert of really exhausting our curative fantasies, having to come to terms with our limitations, our mortality. Joko always said that the point of practice is to learn to suffer intelligently. And in some way, all those sesshins are like a kind of dress rehearsal for the real thing. One way or another, all that pain is voluntary. We're putting ourselves through it. After a certain point, life sends us pain that isn't so voluntary. And we have to watch, well, what did we learn about that? What does it mean to suffer intelligently? Can we suffer without self-reproach, without thinking that our suffering is a sign that we have done something wrong, that we've screwed it all up, that we're not handling ourselves the way we're supposed to? Can we meet that suffering as a kind of lesson in humility, in allowing ourselves to be vulnerable and human? Williams, as a poet, with his strokes, is in danger of losing the very things that made him who he was. And yet, in that vulnerability, there arose a new appreciation, a new wisdom. We don't know what unexpected worlds await us when the world that we have been holding on to, the world we've been pursuing, is lost.